of WBAI Help It Pay Its Bills. You can call 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Or you can go to the WBAI website. That's WBAI.org and click Buddy. So you can become a buddy. That's a monthly sustainer. $15 a month, $10 a month, $25 a month. Or you could make a one-shot contribution to WBAI to help keep it alive. It's independent radio. Independent media is essential to the functioning of a democratic society. So go to WBAI.org or call 212-209-2950. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much.
WBAI New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. It's 9 o'clock, and coming up next is Any Monday with David Rothenberg.
Hope my attitude won't bother you, but the day was long and my mood is blue. I couldn't think where else to go. I just dropped by to say hello. Nothing special that I want to say. I just came to pass the time of day. I've told my heart it mustn't show. I just dropped by to say hello. I've forgotten just how sweet our love was, except now and then. Memories fall just like the rain, and I remember when. Well, don't let me bore you anymore. I'm not quite as lonely as I was before. I didn't want a thing, you know. I just dropped by to say hello. Quite as lonely as I was before. I didn't want a thing, you know. just drop by to say hello.
That's Johnny Hartman, which means it's Monday. And Michael, am I on? Because you know the gremlins interfere with me often as I go on the air. Can you?
Yes, you are, and everything seems okay. Right on. I got it.
You know, I'm for those of you who are not initiated with my travails, I'm home. Michael's at the studio, and I hook up with a computer. And just as I was about to start talking, an insert came in saying something about my microphone, and I thought, "Oh, here we go again." But you can hear me, okay?
Sounds good. Yep.
If anybody's out there in the far reaches listening on the computer, tell me you can hear me. I got I was told the other day I have a listener in Denmark. Mm. I knew I had one in Uganda and the Philippines.
Wow.
And Staten Island. So, Michael, are you Super Bowled out?
I am, yes. I'm done.
You know what happened to me? I watch reclining in the comforts of my bed.
Mm-hmm.
Saw the whole game, but I fell asleep during the halftime show. And usually I want to avoid the halftime show, but I love Usher. Mm. And I haven't seen him in years, and I want to know what he was like these days. So did you see him?
I saw him, but I didn't watch the entire halftime performance.
Did it go on forever? Did I have a good nap?
No, it didn't go on forever. It was pleasingly short for me. Not that big of an Usher fan. I do like him, but not that much. But it didn't go on too long, T-O-O. It didn't go on that long.
Was there a lot of explosions, lights, and thousands of dancers?
I don't know about the explosions, but there were a lot of lights. And
I don't know how I managed. I stayed away for the whole game. The overtime, you know, I'm a KC fan. Johnny come lately. I just think Mahomes is the best thing that's happened to football. I don't know, since I picked up a pigskin. Mm. Just love watching him play. He's so skillful, and he came through at the end.
Yeah,
so.
That's what
you know, everybody pays attention to the ads. You know which one fascinated me?
Which one?
Robert Kennedy Jr. had an ad for president
on it.
He's serious, isn't he?
Yes.
And he's half the age of everybody else running.
Yeah, that's also very true and significant, I guess.
Well, he'd be better than Donald. I mean, he doesn't believe in vaccinations, and he seems to be a little nuts, but not totally.
Yeah.
And so in early polls say he's at 20%, which says, if that holds up, he would throw it into the election into the House.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
Interesting stuff,
just
isn't
what
it?
We need. Yes. Just what
so we how are you?
I am well, thank you. Visited one set of grandchildren over the weekend down in Florida, down in Maryland, and I am still on a high from that.
Yeah, how old are they, the kids?
The oldest is 11, and the youngest is less than a year.
Well, that's delicious. One-year-olds are delicious, aren't they?
Yeah, certainly. Absolutely.
My Aunt Hilda said we'd all get arrested for child perversion because you can't not go in their bare hiney because it's so cute.
That's true. Yeah.
Anyway, we have, we're listener sponsored. Tickets up the gazoo. We were offering tickets for this new off-Broadway musical coming in called Five. We had 4 weeks of tickets for every performance, and they all went. But they're having a press conference on Thursday. Five is a musical, sort of a spinoff of Six. Six is about all the women involved in Henry VIII's life. Five is about another tyrant's women. The women's names are Ivana, Ivanka, Stormy, Melania, Marla. Should be fun. But we do have tickets for Make Me Gorgeous, which is one of the best shows I saw all last year. It was supposed to close New Year's Eve, but because we were so enthused about it, they've kept it running. And Make Me Gorgeous is at West 46. I'll just tell you about my first paragraph of my review said, Make Me Gorgeous, a vivid portrait of Kenneth Marlowe, a colorful performer, hairdresser, whorehouse madam, of another era is much more than a voluptuous entertainment, but it is indeed that, funny, poignant, and audacious. But in today's clouded political climate, it contains layers of social commentary just by its very being. It couldn't play in a lot of places, Tennessee, DeSantis land, etc. So we have tickets. People love it. We've never offered tickets for a show where so many people wanted to go a second and a third time. It's at Theater 46 at St. Luke's Church. And we have tickets this week and next week, Monday nights, Thursday nights, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday matinees. So if you want to see it, it's a $50 gift to BAI. You get a pair of tickets and email me at DPR, my initials, displaced person Rothenberg, DPR fortune at hotmail.com. Give your phone number and I'll call you back today before I go to physical therapy. Let's have some music. Here's Cab Calloway. He's going to Harlem with a song. Well, you'll hear it. Here's Cab.
There's a dear brother got happy on that clarinet. Look at him. Great day. Tell me all about it, brother. Tell me all about it now. Son, get ready for this scat sermon I'm gonna give you here. Look out now. Skip and dig it and bump up and good dude and the skinny booty beat and bottle skinny booty bottle beat and that skinny dotty bottle day. So you the bottle and the moon and his hand is there. Come on, Brother Ray Mark, get happy there, get happy. Shout it, Elder, shout it, Elder. Yowza. Get happy, all you sinners, and get happy here. Swing them, sisters, swing them. This is the kind of camp meetings we have in Harlem. Yeah, man. Beat it out, Brother Payne. Beat it out there, son. Swing them cats. Look out, brother. Tell me all about it, brother. Is you ready? Is you ready? So help me, you is.
Yeah, man.
There was a time when Cab Calloway was the man, and I still love listening to him. I thought that was fun. Michael, on Saturday, you know what I did? At 54 Below, which is a real nightclub, like in the old-fashioned way, a great big, beautiful spot. It's where Studio 54 used to be. And once a month on Saturday afternoons, unbeknownst to me, they have gospel music. And a friend of mine, Mikkel Greengrand, said, you got to come. And I went on Saturday afternoon. Of course, you can't beat it in terms of the voices for gospel singers. And one after another good. And then a young man got up. I recognized him immediately. He had been on Broadway in whatever the musical, the title about the Temptations. And I remember him being good. But here he let loose. His name is Saint Aubyn, A-U-B-Y-N. I mean, think James Brown, Chuck Berry, Jackie Wilson, and put them all together. And then you have this young man. It was a musical. I mean, you talk about explosions. It was on stage. I've never seen anything like it. I said to him afterwards, where have you been all my life? Anytime you're doing anything that people can come see, let me know so I can tell the BAI this is. He is a major, major talent. Wow. I've never seen anything like it on stage. I was exhausted when he did about 20 minutes on a number, and the movements and the splits and the reaching out. Oh, it was so exciting. You know, you think that everything great was in the past, and then some kid comes along and you say, now there's still talent around.
So gospel at 54.
It's 54 below. Once a month. I'll let you know the next Saturday they have it.
Yes.
It's once a month on Saturdays in the afternoon.
Okay.
Go figure. Go know. I mean, there are things in this town. Also, the Joyce Theater, which I think is splendid, always has great dance. We have a company coming in, and we have tickets for BAI listeners. The last week of February, the Sankofa Dance Afro. It's a company that promotes the legacy and traditions of the Afro-Colombian community using dance to retell marginalized histories. It's headed by its director, Rafael Paliosios. And Sankofa means to return to the root, an African philosophy that proposes that the past is a lens through which to view the present. The Joyce Theater is on 8th Avenue and 19th Street. They bring in dance companies from all over the world, and this is a perfect example. The best. I call it the dance capital of the galaxy. So Sankofa Dance Afro, Tuesday, February 27th, Wednesday, February 28th, $60 for a pair of tickets. Email me at dprfortune@hotmail.com. And Michael, I mentioned, I wonder if we're being heard from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
I got an email from Chicago, one from Ithaca, and one from Brooklyn.
Nice.
Saying, we hear you. You're coming in. So anyway, if you want to go to the Joyce, February 27th, 28th, to see Sankofa Dance Afro, email me this morning, dprfortune@hotmail.com. We're going to be talking very shortly with Julian Schlossberg, who is a well-known theater producer, movie producer, and he's got a podcast about all about Hollywood, which is right up my cup of tea. So we're going to play this song will serve as an intro to Julian Schlossberg. The singer is, well, you may recognize her, Doris Kaplowitz. You know her as Doris Day.
Screwy ballyhooey Hollywood, where any office boy or young mechanic can be a panic with just a good looking pan. And any barmaid can be a star maid if she dances with or without a fan. Hooray for Hollywood, where you're terrific if you're even good, where anyone at all from TV's Lassie to Monroe's Chassie is equally understood. Go out and try your luck. You might be Donald Duck. Hooray for Hollywood. Hooray Super Coney, Hollywood. They come from Chillicothe and Paducah's with their bazookas to get their names up in lights. All armed with photos from local rodos, with their hair in ribbons and legs in tights. Hooray for Hollywood. You may be homely in your neighborhood, but if you think that you can be an actor, see Mr. Factor. He'd make a monkey look good. Within a half an hour, you'll look like Tyrone Power. Hooray for Hollywood.
First day celebrating a little town out west. Julian Schlossberg, are you with me?
I am indeed. And I all want to say, David, it would take more than a half hour in my case to look like Tyrone Power.
And some people don't know who he is.
I know. It's really
you're
going,
you're in the world of podcasts now. I envy you because, you've been around a few days. I have no idea how to go. If somebody wants to hear you on the podcast with Movie Talks, how do they go about it?
Well, they first of all have to have a computer.
I have one of those.
That doesn't seem to be a problem. It's on Audible. It's on Spotify. It's on Amazon. It's really all over the place. And
can they find it whenever they want, or do they have to tune in exactly when you're interviewing the stars?
They can find it whenever they want. I just started a couple of weeks ago with F. Murray Abraham, and we kind of...
An Oscar winner.
And we segued into Richard Benjamin, and...
You're squeezing me in this morning before you talk to Isabella Rossellini.
Oh, my God. You know, you sound like Ralph Edwards. Not that they know who he is, but you and I do.
Truth or consequences?
No. This is your life.
Oh, I know. I always remember when poor Lillian Roth was on and he badgered her so terribly.
The very first movie I produced, David, was called 10 from Your Show of Shows. And Sid Caesar and Carl Reiner did the funniest takeoff. They called it This Is Your Story.
I think I remember it.
Carl goes into the audience and Sid doesn't want to come up. It's his life, but he won't come up. So they have to get the ushers.
Yes, I do recall that. Very funny.
Very funny.
So let's talk movies. You have a podcast on movies, and obviously what we share is our love. You know, I still think going into a movie house, sitting there, is a religious experience for me.
Yes. And especially you and I grew up with movie palaces.
Oh,
that was really exciting.
But it was the Rialto in Richfield Park, New Jersey, that wasn't a palace for me on Main Street. I do want to tell you this before we get into the specifics. You know, we complain about movies and they're not like they used to be. In the last 4 days, I saw three just incredibly magnificent pictures. Ava DuVernay's origin, why it was not nominated for an Oscar, I don't know. It's extraordinary, provocative, beautifully done. Then I saw a movie that was nominated for Best Documentary called To Kill a Tiger from India. And then yesterday, the most harrowing film I think I've seen in years called Society in the Snow, Best Foreign Movie or Best International Movie from Spain. Have you seen any of them?
I have not, and I better start moving because I'm in a voter.
You're a voter. Why see Origin, which wasn't nominated, which I find, I think it's the best American movie of last year. I heard no buzz about it until a couple of listeners said, go see it.
Well, it's amazing, David, that you can go see those films because it's so difficult these days to find a place to see movies except on a small screen. And that's
I have to go to the theater. I have to go to the house.
That's right. And that's really the way I feel. And it's very, very difficult often to find what you want to see, even in the biggest city in the country, in New York.
So, well, on your podcast, are you going to talk about the best movies, or have you talked about the best movies, or do you
going
to be doing interviews?
I'm doing two podcasts, and on the second one, I'm with two other producers, Arthur Friedman and Stephen J. Rubin, and we talk, it's called Tales from Hollywood Land, and on that, we'll be doing it. Now, my show is somewhat similar to yours, in as much as I like to do a one-on-one interview for an hour with people, and if I can really kind of find out what I'm interested in, which I hope others are, which is how it all began, where it started. You know, it's great to have somebody on there, huge star, they won Academy Awards, but what was that what they always wanted to do, and where did they come from? What were the parents like? What was the home like?
Yeah.
I mean, you and I grew up at a different time. I mean, I grew up, as you did, in neighborhoods. We lived in a neighborhood. There was a candy store, and there was a delicatessen, and there was a tailor shop. And everything was right at your fingertips. You could go, and now you have to get in a car. You've got to go to a mall. I'm with often friends, children don't even know what a lime is. Never saw a butcher. Didn't know what a butcher was. It's just so shocking to me.
The thing about interviewing movie stars when we were young, and most listeners to radio, I have to point out to you, are young, are old. Young people listen to podcasts. That's why I envy you having a podcast. But movie stars were mysterious and foreign. Foreign, in the, not foreign from other countries, but from a different world. We never saw them. Now they're so ubiquitous. They're on close-ups. They're on red carpets. They're on interviews. So there's no mystery. Going to Hollywood, when I first went in the 60s, I thought, if I could see Loretta Young or Barbara Stanwyck, I would be in Hollywood. Last night at the Super Bowl, there were close-ups of everybody. All the movie stars that were there, you saw them. No mystery.
Yes. Yes,
so when you interview, what you're going to interview Isabella Rossellini today. Where do you start?
Well, I think you start with, I wouldn't open with Roberto Rossellini and Ingrid Bergman as your parents. But I mean, most people know who Ingrid Bergman is. Most people do not know.
Not young people.
Of Roberto Rossellini and the neorealism. And the open city, and Paisan, and the fact that he wrote with Fellini those two movies. There's an incredible background there. But I'll probably start with growing up in France and Italy and the differences in the culture, because that interests me. You know, we know in our country there's quite a difference from a New Yorker and a Texan, for example, you know, or someone from Mississippi. So the fact that France and Italy are two separate countries, what kind of a difference is the culture? The one thing we know is in common, they both know how to make food.
Let me give you a little tip on Isabella Rossellini. I met her only, over a period of a week. This must be 50 years ago. The Fortune Society had just begun, a nonprofit organization I began working with formerly incarcerated people. And RAI, the Italian news station, was coming to and Isabella was the correspondent, and she was, because she had learned, or she was bringing, an American woman who had been in prison in Rome, and she was coming to the Fortune Society. She looked 12 at the time and couldn't have been more gorgeous, but I was surprised. She was a newscaster for RAI, the Italian news station.
And you might be also surprised to know that her fellow reporter was Roberto Benigni.
Really?
Yes.
Do you think he was with her when they came to my office and I didn't know who he was?
Oh,
Oscar-winning actor?
No, they were separate but equal, you know, that kind of thing. But,
isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
So who would you like to interview that's tough to get to or who's no longer alive? Who would you really like to talk to? In the movies.
Who's longer alive, the list is endless, but I could start with, you know, someone like Humphrey Bogart, because he just fascinated me. And And my favorite movie, you know, I don't like answering what's your favorite movie, what would you take on a desert island, etc. But if push came to shove, Casablanca, I must have seen it, I don't know, 30 times.
Oh, well.
To me, there isn't, you know, and you know, as a filmmaker myself, I often will edit other people's movies in my head. Gee, I wouldn't have that scene, or I would have put that later. I wouldn't have done it so early. I wouldn't touch Casablanca.
Perfect. It's a perfect movie.
Perfect movie. Yeah.
And the scene where they discover each other when she's sitting there and Dooley Wilson nods.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
I still get it's overwhelming, the emotion.
Yes. And somehow Sidney Greenstreet was just so interesting to me as the so-called villain, and Peter Lorre as well. But and Major Strasser. No, the whole movie is just wonderful to kind of take in. And so Bogart would be certainly someone I would love to have spoken to. I only met to say hello to Gene Kelly, and I would like to have spent time with him and do an interview. I mean, there's always people you want to, but for example, I wanted to interview David Mamet, and we hadn't seen each other. I had produced a play that he had done, one act, and we hadn't spoken or seen each other in 30, 40 years, but fortunately he agreed, and we did a really interesting interview about his career. And I always, on these interviews, stay away from politics, because right now with a divided country, you never know who's feeling about what, and I know what I feel about, but I want to keep it quiet.
Well, I know that David Mamet is intriguing because he has shifted so drastically from what I would call an enlightened political perspective to the loony bin.
Yes, I think a little bit of the, as they say, a right to a, of Attila the Hun. So you wonder, you just wonder. But so that was terrific. And I'm looking forward to Robert Klein, because a lot of people don't realize that Robert Klein was the very first HBO comedy special that he did. And he's also been an influence, they say, for Ray Romano and Jerry Seinfeld. All of them really kind of look up to him. So I want to talk to him about comedy, of course. And Ben Mankiewicz. I'm going to do an interview with Ben Mankiewicz, the host of TCM, who took over from our friend Bob Osborne, who I'm sure you knew.
Yeah, I didn't, too. But I know that I was surprised. I just read a book about Siskel and Ebert and never realized that one of the people that succeeded them when they were trying to maintain it after they ended, that Ben Mankiewicz was one of the hosts on Thumbs Up.
Oh, yeah. And also a very interesting film critic. He was a film critic before.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever interviewed somebody and they would... They wouldn't talk, or they wouldn't open up,
it was
like pulling teeth?
Oh, no. It was very interesting because I had a call-in show, and I was on from 4 hours, from 8 to midnight. I would just get rid of them quickly. I mean, I just got rid of, I had some famous people come in.
Name the names, Julian.
No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't.
No?
And interestingly enough, some of them are dead. But I had a famous actress come in literally with a bottle of Johnny Walker and drank it like a Pepsi. You had strange things. I will name one story because it was kind of sweet. Irwin Shaw, the great writer who wrote Young Lions, came in, and he was clearly inebriated. And I was going to get rid of him in a second. I just say hello, talk about his new book, and get rid of him. And he, where do I sit? What do I do? What do you want? And so I sat him down. We start the show, and he says, oh, hello, how are you? And I thought, whoa, this is Jekyll and Hyde. He was smashed off the air and totally sober on the
air. Interesting. Fascinating.
Now, that was kind of a fascinating story.
Has, in your many, many interviews or awful interviews, has anyone surprised you that they went somewhere that you never anticipated?
Oh, that happened a lot. What was wonderful, David, was, you know, I'm sure you do this yourself, but I, face-to-face, would never have notes. My goal was to have a conversation, not an interview. Exactly.
I understand that. I get emails saying, you're talking over the guests. And I said, no, we're having a conversation with New Yorkers.
That's right. And we do talk over at times. Well, I'll tell you the funniest thing. I mean, I did an interview with Donald O'Connor, and at the end of the interview, he was just wonderful. And, of course, I loved him as a kid with Francis the Talking
A major tool, talent. Major talent.
Sing and dance and act, and, of course, Singing in the Rain, he and Gene Kelly. You're never going to see the likes of that again, and it won't be La La Land, that's for sure. Yeah. Anyhow, at the end of the interview, I said, Donald O'Connor, you've been in this business over 50 years. You've done it all. You've been in a theater and television and movies. I said, but of everything you've done, what would you say was the highlight of your career? And he said, talking to you, Julian.
And a charmer. The next time you see Singing in the Rain, which I watch every time it comes on, when he and Gene Kelly are doing that duet with the professor, he keeps checking over, every now and then he keeps checking over at Kelly as if he's following the master. And I keep thinking, I want to shout, Donald, you don't have to check with anybody. You are just superb. But Kelly is oblivious and doesn't pay any attention to O'Connor, but O'Connor keeps checking over. It's a fascinating little nuance that intrigued me.
And one of the best numbers in the show, Moses Supposes, written by Betty Comden and Adolph Green, because as you know, most of the music is old songs from Arthur Freed.
Yeah. Do you find as I do now? Used to be people would come into a studio and interview them. Much easier because there's right now you're on the phone and I'm at a microphone miles away from you. There's no nodding or understanding. I don't know when you finished a sentence, and it makes it it's much more difficult to have a cohesive interview this way, don't you think?
100% I agree with you, and I don't know if I could have done a show that way. You've been doing it for 30-some-odd years, so you obviously have mastered it, but it's so much better face-to-face.
Or not mastered it. That's the point.
Well, I would say you have. I wanted to mention to you, because I know that you often love to play Nichols and May, and I'm happy to say that for over 30 years I represent Mike and Elaine on their CDs and on films that they did, and we sell clips often to people doing compilation films, and they did a great, I know you know about the Grief Lady in the funeral sequence, and we sold that years ago to 60 Minutes when they were doing a whole show on funerals, and when Mike and Elaine did it caused a furor from that business because they really sent it up.
Their funniest sketch from the 9 o'clock review that Alex Cohn produced was the interview of the late night, very much like Jack Igan interviewing a starlet. She was Barbara Musk.
That's right. And he was known in that its sketch as Jack Ego.
Yes. And she was promoting her movie, The Life Story, called Two Gals from Paris, The Life Story of Gertrude Stein. And she says, it's a great opportunity. I'm playing Gertrude Stein. And he says, I thought Spencer Tracy was playing that part. And then she tops him and says, only as a child. She always, Elaine always managed to top Mike, and he seemed to get a kick out of it, didn't he?
Yes, Mike always said Elaine was the smart one. Well, you know, knowing both of them, they both were brilliant. You know, in our business, the word genius is bandied around. I've met very few, but those two were just something.
Yeah. Besides interviewing people now, you produce movies and plays. What are the highlights for you? What do you have the greatest pride in, the movies that you presented or plays that you presented?
Well, I think one of the things was that Orson Welles had made a movie of Othello, and it took him years to make it. He would run out of money, and then he would make The Third Man, take the money and make it again, and Prince of Foxes, speaking of Tyrone Power. And he finally finished the movie, and no one would distribute it. He could not get a distributor. And finally, over, I think, a couple of years after it was finished, United Artists agreed to open it in Manhattan only at the Paris Theater. And it opened and did not do well, and he put it away in storage. And when he passed away, his one of his daughters, Beatrice, had the rights to the film. And she came to me, and I screened it and just thought it was sensational, but terribly out of sync. You know, in Italy, even today, they often don't record sound live. They go back and then put it in, actually going and mouthing the words sometimes. So it was out of sync, and it was in bad shape. And through some fellows in Chicago, a couple of attorneys, we were able to take the movie and totally refurbish it, just kind of bring it back to its great grandeur. And I brought it to Cannes at the Cannes Film Festival, and we had this incredible night. And then I sold it all over the world, and it's a brilliant movie. And the concept of being able to feel that because of what I did, this film no longer languishes. It's all over the world. And the brilliance of Orson Welles is once again shown because, sadly, he was only able to make 8-10 movies because
yeah.
of the fact
I never that saw that Othello. Who was Desdemona and Iago in it?
Well, Iago was an Irish actor named Michael McLeamore.
I remember
headed
him,
up
yeah.
by, yeah, and Suzanne Cloutier was Desdemona, a very beautiful Canadian actress who had been married to Peter Ustinov. It's a really wonderful movie, and I'll tell you a quick story. You know, when you do a movie and you have a mix, there are what are called three stripes. One is the dialogue. It's a separate channel. One is the sound effects, and one is when you put your music in. So it's a three stripe, and then you make it into one. And there are people who are mixers. That's what they do. They take all of the dialogue and the music, put it together into one beautiful stripe, you hope. Anyhow, I knew I needed a great mixer, and the one in New York was named Lee, and he was just Lee Dichter. He was just a great mixer. He had done Mike Nichols, Woody Allen, Nora Ephron, Alan Pakula. All the great directors went to Lee. So I called him, and I said, Lee, I really need some help. I'm booked. I can't do anything. I'm booked for another 6 months. I said, okay, no, I just need your advice, though. Can I just show you this first reel? He said, okay, come over. But I'm
of Othello, you're talking about.
Yeah, of Othello. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so the first reel starts out with unbelievable music and unbelievable photography of Orson Welles as Othello being carried on almost a funeral pyre, almost held, and people are, there's a shot of castles, and it just goes on, and it's just brilliant. And he turns to me, because he's an artist, and he says to me, you son of a, you know what, he says, okay, I'll work at nights and on weekends, and I'll do it.
Well, how do you not be involved with an Orson Welles movie when you have the opportunity, right?
Exactly. And of course,
we could talk forever. And you know what I talk about with you, Julian, is I think every third person we mention, I have to think that now, does anybody remember who they are? Then you mentioned Peter Ustinov, and I thought, well, he was a big name at one point. Is he known? I'm constantly explaining to younger people who Peter Ustinov is and who Richard Benjamin is. It's fascinating. Yeah.
It's
but you have to go and interview Isabella at 10 o'clock, don't you?
I do indeed. And I will say that having a young assistant who came in and never heard of George C. Scott was enough to send me into the... I don't know.
Well, I'll pass this one on to you as a porter. I have a picture of me with a woman named Elizabeth Taylor. And this young woman said, oh, what a beautiful woman. And I looked at her and I said, it's Elizabeth Taylor. She looked perplexed. And then she said... Oh, the woman with the perfume.
Oh, and David, years ago in Sam Goody's, I'm going through some CDs, looking at, and there's three girls next to me, and one of them yells, screams. You wouldn't believe it, she said. Paul was in a group before Wings. And I thought, I better get out of here. Just leave.
All right. Julia Schlossberg, one last question. Tell us again, if somebody wants to hear you on podcast, they can do it at any time. They don't have to tune in like they do. Well, actually, you know, you don't have to tune in with me anymore because there's something called the archives, things that I don't understand. But if they want to hear your movie interview, your movie talk, how do they go about it?
Well, they can go to Audible, Amazon, Spotify, Pandora, all these places that are, thank goodness, carrying it. And David, just quickly, I just finished doing the audio version of my book, Try Not to Hold It Against Me. And I'm very excited about that. I wish I had brought it up, and I wish I had mentioned it to you earlier. But anyhow, thanks so much. It was such a pleasure. I hope one day we really can do a real long interview in person. It'll be a conversation.
It would be nice. And remind Isabella she was a very good reporter on RAI.
I will indeed. Thank
All right, Julian.
So
thank you so much. You're going out with Tracy Chapman coming in.
Get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove. You get a fast car. I got a plan to get us out of here. Been working at the convenience store. Managed to save just a little bit of money. Won't have to drive too far. Just cross the border and into the city. You and I can both get jobs and finally see what it means to be living. See, my old man's got a problem. Yeah, but the bottle, that's the way it is. He says, body's too old for working. His body's too young to look like his. My mama went off and left him. She wanted more from life than he could give. I said, somebody's got to take care of him. So I quit school, and that's what I did. You got a fast car. Is it fast enough so we can fly away? We gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way. So I remember when we were driving, driving in your car. Speed so fast, it felt like I was drunk. City lights stay out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. Someone. You got a fast car. We go cruise and entertain ourselves. Still ain't got a job. Now work in the market as a checkout girl. I know things will get better. You'll find work and I'll get promoted. We'll move out of the shelter. Buy a bigger house and live in the suburbs. I remember when we were driving, driving in your car. Speed so fast, it felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. You got a fast car. I got a job that pays all our bills. You sell drugs.
drinking late at the bar. Some more your friends than you do your kids. I'd always hope for better. Thought maybe together you and me find it. I got no plans, I ain't going nowhere. Take your fast car and keep on driving. You got a fast car. Is it fast enough so you can fly away? You gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way.
Tracy Chapman, who was surprised me when she appeared at the Grammys. Everybody else was 12 years old, and Tracy Chapman, this veteran, beautiful singer, who I first heard on WBAI, Dred Scott Keys. I think we talked about that, Michael. We all learned about Tracy years ago when Dred Scott Keys was a great enthusiast of her. A story in the paper this week that has lots of implication. New York City's housing crunch is the worst it's been in more than 50 years. The portion of rental that were vacant and available dropped to a startling 1.4% in 2023. According to city data released, it was the lowest vacancy rate since 1968 and shows just how drastically home construction lags behind the demand from people who want to live in the city. Well, the other part of that story is, of course, is that the developers are building luxury high rises. And, you know, at a place like Hudson Yards, we are told that a great percentage of the apartments are not being lived in, that they are the second homes of corporations or wealthy people who find it convenient to come to New York and not stay in a hotel, to stay in their apartment. It's also a good business investment. You buy an apartment for $2 million, and 2 years later, you sell it for $3 million. And while we have a housing crunch, the big money is for each floor of an expensive luxury apartment. That's millions for the developers. And at some point, you know, this has happened in my lifetime, that the developers became the oil kings. They're just like the oil people in Texas. They're the deep pockets. They have enormous political influence. And they don't seem to have an investment in the best quality that sustains this city. It's get what you can get it, and don't worry about the future or anybody else. So the apartment shortage has to do with the developers. They're not interested in six-story buildings that cover a vast land and can house people at reasonable rates. They want those tall, very ugly glass buildings that are sprinkling around Manhattan, and I must add Long Island City. And they're expensive, and many of them are empty. You go by Hudson Yards and they see the homeless people on the street and knowing that there are empty apartments. And it's not just those. The pandemic caused a lot of people who had second homes to go to the second homes, and their nice apartments are empty. I'm not faulting, somebody has a house and they want to stay in it, fine for them. But as far as the developers go, it gets very confusing in the city planning, and that's because too many of the elected officials are dependent on the deep pockets of the developers to sustain themselves politically. Hello, Mayor Adams. We have tickets for a show called This Is Not a Time of Peace. It's written by Deb Marglin, who's done a lot of work in theater in recent years, also very provocative. It's a seven-character drama about a woman who struggles to save her father from the memories of his country's betrayal in the Red Scare of the 50s. And that's a period that many of us want to sustain in people's mind because it, everything old is new again. And what this country has been capable of is scapegoating people. And that's part of our history. And the Red Scare was real. And many of us knew people that did endure it and survived it. And some didn't. It's called This Is Not a Time of Peace. It's coming at Theater Row, that nice complex on West 42nd Street. And we have tickets Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, the 20th, 21st, and 22nd of February. And then the following Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. If you want to see Deb Margolin's play, This Is Not a Time of Peace, a $50 gift to listener-sponsored BAI. Email me at dprfortune@hotmail.com. Give your phone number. And I will indeed call you back following this program. And we continue playing music. Here's, Julian Schlossberg just referred to Paul McCartney. Here he is with three other guys. They call themselves the Beatles. Here's a song you don't hear much of which you don't hear much, to end, make this grammatically correct. I didn't know this, but I was playing a Beatles CD, and I found this one, so enjoy. Thank you, listener Connie, who alerted me that this week is the 60th anniversary of the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. For many of you, that means nothing. But there was a moment in America, 75 million people tuned into Ed Sullivan. This group had been we had been hearing about them in New York. I had been in London before they came to New York. And when I came back, I said, there's a group that I heard. They're very different, and they are big in London and in England, and let's see what happens here. And then Ed Sullivan booked them, and it changed music history around the world. Probably the biggest singing group in the history of music. The Beatles. There's a story this week about a teenager charged as an adult. A young boy from Venezuela, 15, his name is not given, who shot a gun and it wounded a tourist. Two things I want to talk about this. One is that he's being charged as an adult, and he's not an adult, he's a child. The reason we have laws like that is because children should be treated differently in the courts because their decision-making, their maturity, the accountability should be different. And I find it distressing that he will be charged as an adult and tried as an adult because he is a child. He's 15 years old. And I'm not apologizing or minimizing what he did, but he is still a child, irrespective of what. You can't just change the rules because you're unhappy with the trend of what's happening and thinking this serves as a deterrent. If that was the case, then those cops that ganged up on Eric Garner would have been a deterrent for cops beating up on African-American men, but it doesn't seem to be. So the other thing is that there was this crime wave of kids on bikes grabbing pocketbooks and grabbing people. And it was scary, and they caught them, and they five of them have been charged. And the mayor had a press conference, and he wore a vest that said police. And I'm screaming, you're not a policeman, you're a mayor. You were a policeman, but you're the mayor now. Your vest should say mayor, not police. But more distressing than that is that he painted a broad brush about immigrant crimes. And there's no indication that there's a crime wave of new immigrants. Teenagers that are caught, are always identified as immigrants, whereas the crimes committed by homeborn are not described as thus. The crime wave seems to be more in the media and with politicians than in reality. And I'm not minimizing the crimes that do take place, but there's always crime. And there's a difference when there's a crime wave and when there's media, New York One, Daily News, opening, you know, headlines and opening the report in the morning with the crimes that have been committed. But my first concern is that this young boy, who's not named because he's a juvenile, his picture's in the paper, he looks like he's up, that he not be tried as an adult. In case anybody's listening, in case anyone cares. Let's continue with our music this morning. One of the best musicals of all time, won a Pulitzer Prize, was Fiorello. Harnack and Bach wrote it. Never was made into a movie. I don't know why. Certainly right for it. Tom Bosley became a star in it. He played Fiorello, went on to have a television series, title of which I don't remember. 14 people will tell me what it was. But here's Howard Da Silva, who was blacklisted, by the way, for his had the audacity to have a political conscience or a social conscience that manifested itself politically. Here he is with some of the men talking about the little tin box, which is part of politics, from Fiorello, Howard Da Silva, the Mishmucha, and Little Tin Box.
Your witness.
Mr. X, may we ask you a question? It's amazing, is it not, that the city pays you slightly less than $50 a week, yet you've purchased a private yacht.
I am positive your honor must be joking. Any working man can do what I have done. For a month or two I simply gave up smoking, and I put my extra pennies one by one into a little tin box. A little tin box that a little tin key unlocks. There is nothing unorthodox about a little tin box.
About a little tin
box. About a little tin box.
In a little tin box. A little tin box that a little tin key unlocks.
There is honor and purity.
Lots of security.
In a little tin box.
Next witness.
Mr. Y, we've been told you don't feel well, and we know you've lost your voice. But we wonder how you managed on the salary you make to acquire a new Rolls Royce.
You're implying I'm a crook, and I say no, sir. There is nothing in my past I care to hide. I've been taking empty bottles to the grocer, and each nickel that I got was put aside.
That he got was put aside.
Into a little tin box.
A little tin box that a little tin key unlocks. There is nothing unorthodox about a little tin box.
About a little tin
about box. About a little tin
box. It's a little tin box. A little tin box. There's a cushion for life's rude shots.
There is faith, hope, and charity.
Hard-won prosperity
in a little tin box.
Next witness, take the stand.
Mr. Z, you're a junior official, and your income's rather low. Yet you've kept a dozen women in the very best hotels. Would you kindly explain how so?
I can see your honor doesn't pull his punches, and it looks a trifle fishy, I'll admit. But for one whole week I went without my lunches, and it mounted up your honor bit by bit.
Up your honor, bit by bit.
It's just a little tin box.
A little tin box that a little tin key unlocks.
There is nothing unorthodox about a little tin box.
About a little tin box.
About a little tin box.
It's a little tin box. A little tin box. All a glitter with blue chip stocks.
There is something delectable,
almost respectable,
in a little tin box.
In a little tin box.
From Fiorello. I'm sending Michael Haskins a little email, and I just sent it. Howard DeSilva and the gang from Fiorello. It was an interesting story in the paper. Representative Mike Gallagher, a Republican of Wisconsin, announced that he would not run for re-election. And this came just days after he was one of the three Republicans who broke with his party to cast a decisive vote against impeachment charges against Alejandro Mayorkas, the Homeland Security Secretary. Which brings to mind the importance of that vote, of that election tomorrow in Nassau County, where Thomas Susi is running against, what's her name? Mazie Pillup, who I don't know that much about Susi. I guess he's not the perfect candidate, but she seems to have about the same kind of qualifications as the predecessor, George Santos. What's going on with the Republicans there? They couldn't find somebody. She can't. There are all sorts of things being said about her, about taxes and not filing. And she was a Democrat before this race, and she had never voted as a Republican. And she wouldn't do debates. The important thing is, and I'm told that immigration is a big issue in Nassau County or in this district, but it would keep the Mike Johnson having more control. And it's not just about that race. It's about the Democrats having a stronger voice in the House to maintain some sort of sanity in our political, whatever is going on. Anyway, that's what I wanted to say. That every time a Republican breaks rank, he either doesn't run for office, announces that he's never running again. That's what the situation with Gallagher from Wisconsin, and it makes the Nassau County election tomorrow that much more vital. Last week I announced 25 years ago on this program, I asked people to pick the 10 best movies that they've ever seen. And several hundred people sent me letters with their choices. That was before emails. Now you don't even have to use a stamp. I'm going to have every 25 years, I'm going to have this. It's not a contest. It's just illuminating. What do BAI people think are the best movies they ever saw? So I'm charging you with this assignment. Pick the 10 best movies you've ever seen in your lifetime. When it's all compiled, I'll share with you mine and what the collected responses from BAI. We'll announce this all around Oscar time in March. So email me at dprfortune@hotmail.com your 10 favorite movies of all time. And we'll have a BAI celebration of those pictures. I do an essay called Out on a Limb. I do it on Saturdays, and then I repeat it on Mondays. And this is Monday, so I'm going to do it right now. It's an essay that I have the presumption to share with you. Last week, I watched segments of the Grammy Awards. It was competing on television with an NBA game, Portland versus Denver. The incredible Nikola Jokic making it difficult to stay with the glamour of the Grammys. Though earlier I did watch the E! Channel's red carpet show in which the word amazing must have set a Guinness Book of Records for its use in describing dresses, songs, suits, and jewelry. And I did see enough of the Grammys to put my mind into a spin. Of course, first and foremost, there was some spectacular entertainment, starting with Miley Cyrus, who is clearly no longer Disney's Hannah Montana. Her song and dance number, Flowers, could easily have been called Attitude. And she has legs that go on forever. And then there was Tracy Chapman, now a music elder, whose commanding voice was nothing less than, dare I say it, amazing. Something else was happening at the Grammys. At the opening, Trevor Noah, the ebullient MC, noted that in several categories, the nominees were women, new territory in this environment, prompting appropriate cheers. It was a cultural breakthrough. And that's not to say that through the ages there's been an absence of women, but past winners for the best album or the best song include Judy Garland, Tina Turner, Barbara Streisand, Natalie Cole, Adele, Taylor Swift, among others. But it's been at all levels male-dominated. And I want to point out that Jay-Z made a political comment, noting that Beyoncé has never won the big one, although she has 38 Grammys, so she hasn't been totally ignored, implying that there was a racial component to it. And Lord knows racism has, the absence of people of color in voting was a factor. But he didn't mention gender, which has also have been a factor traditionally. Mostly men, and a lot of men of color have been nominated. But it's another instance in which women are being celebrated for taking leadership, albeit late in the game. Changing venues. I remember a time when Margaret Chase Smith was the only woman in the United States Senate, which was always an all-male bastion, and that's been dramatically altered in the Senate and in the House of recent years, and there are many more women governors and mayors assuming leadership roles in the media and the commerce. But make no mistake, white males are the most represented demographic in the corridors of power. And away from those highly visible arenas, women who are teachers and waitresses, healthcare workers, administrative assistants still have a salary gap as a reality. Change comes slowly. And all that being said, none of which is hardly breaking news, there is an aspect of changing roles that needs some attention. I was alerted by a production number at the Grammys, which appeared to me in which women were choreographically beating up on men, physically warding them off, not in defense, but resembling how men have shown up in movies or in television, violence or degradation of women. Jimmy Cagney squirting grapefruit in the face of May Clark, Lee Marvin pouring hot coffee on Gloria Graham, or Dan Duryea slapping every woman in all of his pictures. And I have to point out that Joan Crawford for equal time slapped the men in every picture. I was never enthusiastic with the movies Thelma and Louise. I didn't see them as liberated, responding to them having been attacked, or blazing new paths for women. Rather, roles which two men could easily have assumed, robbing, speed racing, and self-destructing. They were closer to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid than to Margot Channing or Mildred Pierce, strong women who shaped their own destiny. Behaving like men seems to be more of a detour than progress. And here's where I get in hot water. I believe that with notable exceptions, men and women are quite different. For instance, I celebrate the arrival of women in politics because problem solving, dare I say it, the nurturing instincts allow for wiser choices than men who too often mistake being aggressive for strength. I think Nancy Pelosi is one of the most remarkable leaders in the push and pull of contemporary politics. And ignore how you might feel about her on particular issues. As a Speaker of the House, she was magnificent. Compare her to that comedy group who have been caught in the revolving door of GOP males, none of whom, well, all of whom have postured, flexed muscles, but none of whom could lead. Of course, there is the occasional cartoon female figure like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who among her multiple shortcomings is her insistent efforts to be one of the boys, when being one of the girls might serve the country far better. Moving away from politics, almost every woman I know has had an experience when a man presumed or intimidated, a condition that shapes how one ventures into life, and an issue more often suggested in comedic terms than the fear that it instills. The battle of the sexes is quite complex. Sexual aggression is a powerful component of life, and women have been learning how to protect themselves and to retaliate against sexual violence and presumption. To be alert or defensive is quite different than emulating the aggressor. Preemptive strikes in international politics or on the streets of New York is not the answer, tempting as it might appear. It is my contention that women in the public arena are most effective when they follow their instincts. I'm suggesting that having a feminine approach not be burdened with apologies. Men go to war. Women seek alternatives. It's a broad generalization with a nod to Margaret Hatcher, but I'm clear how I feel on this. Our prisons and jails are now and always have been 90% male inhabitants, and little girls are growing up and face the same degree of poverty, hunger, racism, and classism as young boys, with the added factor of sexism, often manifested in violent or sexual abuse. Yet males respond quite differently to societal shortcomings. So when we are talking about root causes of crime, gender, testosterone should be in the discussion. And those same qualities are evident in almost every other aspect of modern social living. Suggesting gender differences is often considered retro. And I'm not talking about sexual orientation at all. Gay adult men were raised knowing male entitlement, and adult lesbian women early know the gender roles and rules. I applaud and celebrate women in roles of leadership at all levels and all arenas, and I don't believe that a woman has to assume male traits to peak. In fact, I think we'd be better off if men in politics relied more on the women in their lives. Let me make my point. There's a little doubt in my mind that Barack Obama talked through many issues with Michelle, his wife, Michelle Obama. And I treasure the stories of Tasha and Malia, one of whom, I think it was Malia, on the issue of gay marriage reportedly said, "Get with the program, Mr. President." Conversely, I don't think it ever occurred to Donald Trump to seek an opinion from Melania. He probably gained more insight from Stormy Daniels. I'm David Rothenberg, out on a limb. And now from the sublime to the ridiculous, here's from back in the day when he was a stand-up comic, Woody Allen.
I shot a moose once. I didn't mean to break it to you that way. I shot a moose. Was hunting upstate New York in the woods. And I tied the moose onto the fender of my car, and I drove back home. But I didn't realize that the bullet had not penetrated the moose, but had just creased its scalp, knocking it unconscious. I'm driving home along the highway, and I'm going through a tunnel. The moose woke up. So I'm driving with a live moose on my fender. And the moose is signaling for a turn. And there's a law in New York State against driving with a conscious moose Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. All right, I don't know what to do. I'm panicking. I realize some friends of mine are having a costume party. I'll go with the moose. I'll ditch him at the party. It wouldn't be my responsibility. So I drive to the party. I go up to the front door. The moose is next to me. I knock on the front door. The host comes to the door. I say, hello. You know the Solomons. We go in. The moose starts to mingle. Goes to the buffet table. Some guy tries to sell him insurance. The moose is doing great, meanwhile, you know. He scored. 12 o'clock comes. They judge who's got the best costume of the night. First prize goes to the Berkowitzes. A married couple dressed in a moose suit. The moose comes in second. The moose is furious. He and the Berkowitzes lock antlers in the living room. They knock each other unconscious. Now I figure I'll get rid of him for good. I pile him on the fender and speed up to the woods. But I got the Berkowitzes. I'm driving along with two Jewish people on my fender. And there's a law in New York State. The next one, the Berkowitzes wake up in the woods in a moose suit. Mr. Berkowitz is shot, stuffed, and mounted at the New York City Golf Club. And the joke is on them because they don't allow Jews.
That's when Woody Allen was at his funniest and the best. I love the fact that the Berkowitzes won first prize in a moose outfit and the moose came in second and they locked antlers.
You know the Solomons.
That's what he says to the moose. Do you know the Solomons? Michael, did you find that funny?
Oh, it was hysterical,
you know, that's 50
yes.
years ago. Does
yeah,
it hold
yeah.
up?
Well, very much so, yes.
Yeah. By the way, thank you for the pictures you sent me of you with your grandchildren.
Oh, you're welcome, David.
You look like the happiest man in the world with those little tots surrounding you
yeah.
in Maryland.
It was very,
what was
very
that like?
Magical. It was just magical. You know, everybody asking a question, wanting to hug on granddaddy. I just love it.
Now, whose children are they?
Oh, that's my oldest son's kids.
Yeah, and they're all. He has how many?
Five.
Oh my goodness! And they're in Maryland.
Yeah.
Aren't you lucky? When you go down there, that must be a feast.
Yes, yes, it is.
Yeah, nothing beats it. And at that age, they're so full of inquiry and wonderment. It's delightful to see, isn't it?
It is, it is. What do you do, Granddaddy? I have to tell them about the radio, and they're really intrigued about that.
What's radio?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Do you know that Radio Shack, which doesn't exist anymore, in its final days, there was one on 23rd and 7th, and I went in for a radio, and they didn't have any?
Didn't have any, yeah.
They didn't know what a radio was. Anyway, we have tickets for Make Me Gorgeous this week and next. It's a brilliant show. It's unlike anything you'll see. And I can say that with great comfort because so many of the listeners who have gone to see it have, I got two emails today saying, thank you for Make Me Gorgeous. Don't thank me. I'm just the messenger. But people want to see it again so they can bring Aunt Tilly to share the joy. This portrait of a man who lived in the 40s before, during, and after World War II, clearly openly gay, was a madam in a male whorehouse. And it's a voluptuous entertainment, and it's funny, and it's poignant, and it's audacious. And I always point out that it's also 10 years ago, it would just be considered a wildly fun entertainment. Now has layers and layers of political implications because of the changing, well, the retro political part in places like Tennessee and Florida, which are changing. They want to rewrite history. They don't want to teach about slavery or the Civil War, and they don't want to know that men get up and drag. It's what we're going through at this time, and how it plays out depends on all of us. You know, it's there's several articles in the Times today, two or three, about Biden's age and interviews with 80-year-olds and what they think about a man 80 running for president. There's a wonderful cartoon of in the news. I don't have it in front of me, but the pollster saying, do you prefer an older man who can't remember some things or a demagogue who can remember all of the things that he resents and wants to retaliate against? People are unhappy. I get emails saying that people say they're going to vote for Robert Kennedy because they can't vote for Biden or Trump. And I tell people that we went through that with Hillary. It's about the judges. I'll vote for Joe Biden. I hope that the Democrats could come up with somebody else. But I would rather mark time for 4 years and not have judicial appointments continue with Trump calling on them, like we had with Roe versus Wade, and the courts now dealing with deregulations. The fisheries, the fishermen who have been told that – the big fishermen been told that they have to limit their catching because the fish are becoming obsolete in certain areas. If that's deregulated – that government restriction, all sorts of things affecting health and safety, where profits interfere with the changes. And I tell this story, if you've heard me tell it, I'll tell it again, that there was a pipeline in Texas that exploded, and a young couple on their way to the senior prom were killed in the explosion. Their car was hit. And the pipeline was the big money people in it were the Koch brothers. And a young engineer came to one of the Koch brothers who was in charge and had a blueprint for how to redesign the pipeline so that there wouldn't be any explosions. And he was told that, this is in J.M. Mayer's book, Dark Money. He was told that it's cheaper to pay off the lawsuits than to redesign the pipeline. And safety and, when you read about the Pinto car or food being pulled back because people are getting sick, that's all from regulations. The courts are going to be dealing with regulations, and it's the Trump court, and it scares me what they might decide. So that's all an issue. I was talking about Make Me Gorgeous, the play. We have tickets, several performances this week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, Sunday matinee. This week and next, $50 for two tickets. Treat yourself. Support BAI with a $50 gift and go see this wonderful entertainment. You go into this small theater. It's made into like a comforting reception. Like a reception hall or a dining hall. And you're sitting at a table. You're sitting at tables, and this fascinating character comes in and tells you these incredible stories. It's quite an evening. So email me at dprfortune@hotmail.com. Give your phone number and I'll call you today. And Doris Day has entered our premises to do a encore. This is an old Rodgers and Hart song.
With you, I rule the earth. With you, I ruled creation. Know you, and what's it worth? It's just an imitation. Your sweet expression, the smile you gave me, the way you looked when we met, it's easy to remember, but so hard to forget. I hear you whisper, I'll always love you. I know it's over, and yet it's easy to remember, but so hard to forget. So I must dream to have your hands caress me, fingers press me tight. I'd rather dream than have that lonely feeling stealing. It's easy to remember, but so hard to forget.
Doris Day, the former Doris Kaplowitz. If you haven't heard it from other programs or from me, one of our colleagues, James Irsay, passed away in the last week. He held forth in recent years on Sunday mornings with his insightful commentary as he played classical music. He was also a kind and a kind man. Is that, does that sound slight? There was a gentleness and a warm humor about James, and I would never presume that we were close, but it was nice to have a colleague with whom you felt comfortable and over the years shared many stories and experiences together. WBAI was very fortunate to have a man of his quality at the microphone for so many years, and his absence will be noted. I'm David Rothenberg, and I'm going to do a review of a play that I saw for which we do not have tickets. Every time I see a play, that doesn't mean we necessarily have tickets. I'm a drama desk voter, so I get to see a lot of theater that don't necessarily give us tickets, but I get a chance to share it with you so you can determine if you're so inclined. The play is called Aristocrats. Brian Friel's Aristocrats gives strong evidence that not all theatrical dysfunctional families live south of the Mason-Dixon line. The much-honored playwright, Brian Friel, is being celebrated by the Irish Repertory Company in a season that has so far presented his translations, with Philadelphia Here I Come next on their schedule. Ireland's mid-20th century political turmoil hovers over the languid, crumbling mansion in Aristocrats. Four adult siblings have gathered, telling a visiting professor of their privileged childhoods. One laments that they were not prepared for any meaningful vocation. Their dying patriarch is bedded upstairs, and a nattily attired uncle representing the mores of the past parades quietly across the lawn which surrounds the estate. Perhaps time and an ocean has lessened the political rippling effects which reveals itself in the family's decline. The three daughters and one son are all in a land of limbo, recalling lost glories enjoyed by a small handful in the land. Irish history aside, Aristocrats seems to be a theatrical cousin of Brandon Jacobs Jenkins' Appropriate, now on Broadway, where a family has gathered at their decaying Arkansas plantation. The two families might recognize the political and economic waves that have altered their lives. Under Charlotte Moore's firm staging, Aristocrats at the Irish Rep as a uniformly excellent cast, and once again, Charles Corcoran's scenic design captures the mood of Mr. Friel's sentiments. Aristocrats lacks the theatrical oomph of some other Friel plays, particularly the splendid Dancing at Lunasa, but it contains a literary glance of recent Irish history. That's my view of Aristocrats, as we welcome a return of the sounds of the fabled Cab Calloway with a song by Harold Arlen and Ted Kayla.
Cokies laid around. Some were high and some were mighty low. Counting millions on the floor when a knock came on the door, and there stood old Smokey Joe. He was sweating cold and pale. He was looking for his trail. He was broke and all his junk ran out. As he stood and looked around, nobody made a sound, and then you'd hear old Cokie shout, "Tell me, where is Minnie?
Where is Minnie?
I want Minnie.
You want Minnie.
Has she been here kicking the gong around?
Cab Calloway doesn't seem to have any legacy. Why is that, Michael? Is it because he, television or movies? He's in a couple of old pictures, right. But young people don't seem to know him, whereas they know other singers of that period.
I don't know, David, but check out the video. That was one, as you know, parlance would say, a fine man. Are you kidding me? My father told me a story about where he was run out of Florida when he came down here to do a show or shows, and some of the white girls were... This is
taken,
you know,
by him.
Hey, look here. Were taken by him, and long before any Elvis Presley, this man was, you know.
Oh, he was. Yeah, if you see the old film clips of him, his movements. Oh, he was an entertainer as well as the singing is fun and good, but he was an entertainer.
Sure was
extraordinary.
Yeah.
You know, earlier I mentioned this young man that I saw. And several people have asked what his name is. I wrote it down. Saint A.U. He was in, what was the name of the musical on Broadway about the Temptations? Ain't No Something?
Mm.
Well, he was in that. But his name is Saint Aubyn, A-U-B-Y-N. And I saw him Saturday at 54 Below with the gospel program that they had there. Just an extraordinary major talent. Anyway, what else? I hope people are thinking of their 10 favorite movies of all time that they can send me at dprfortune@hotmail.com. And I want to remind you that we have tickets for Deb Margolin's play, This Is Not a Time of Peace, a play that a 7-character drama about a woman trying to help her father save her father from the memories of the betrayal he felt during the Red Scare of the 50s. I know that was a bitter time for many of us where we felt that America, well, it's happening. It happens under the Trump regime, where you feel your country is turning your back on you. That certainly was in the 50s. I know my friend Jack Gilford, who was blacklisted from, he couldn't appear on television and movies for 10 years, had to make his living in the theater and in nightclubs. Jack was a good man, but not terribly political, but he signed petitions objecting to lynchings. And some of the organizers of it were obviously communist front organizations, but he got blacklisted. He couldn't work because of that. This good man was betrayed by his country. Anyway, this play, This Is Not a Time of Peace, is coming to Theater Row on West 42nd Street. We have tickets 2 weeks from tomorrow. Oh, let's see, is the 20th? Is that today is the 12th. Oh, it's next Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. By the way, today is Abe Lincoln's birthday. We don't celebrate it anymore as we did when I was a kid. We took off from school on Abe's birthday and George's. Now they just have President's Day. But happy birthday, Abe. I think there's a song in Hair. I should have played that today. Happy birthday, A.B. Baby. Anyway, I'm jumping around. This Is not a Time of Peace, Deb Margolin's play. We have tickets next Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night, 7 o'clock, Theater Row. $50 gets you 2 tickets. Email me at dprfortune@hotmail.com. And Tracy Chapman's here for an encore performance.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line. Waiting for a promotion, don't you know? Talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. poor people gonna rise up, get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's theirs. Don't you know you better? But a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Oh no. Talking about a revolution. Oh, while they're standing in the welfare line, crying at the doorsteps of the armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. And finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn, talking about a revolution. Oh no, talking about a revolution. Oh no, talking about a revolution.
Tracy Chapman's back. We don't need a research assistant here at this program. I have the listeners. Ain't Too Proud is the musical that was about the Temptations, in which Saint Auburn was a part. And Doris Day, known as Dodie to her friends, her name was not Doris Kaplowitz, like I said, but Doris Kappelhoff. I mean, I just have to say it and you'd correct me. Who needs to pay for a research assistant? Who needs Google? I have the listeners. Aren't I lucky? Talking about all of that, I read an op-ed piece in the Times by this guy. He was the editor of a small newspaper in Iowa. And he's lamenting, and I think this is happening around the country. I've always had, you've probably had, friends and relatives at dinner table that you disagree on who you're supporting in office, or, you know, who do you want for governor, who do you want for mayor, and you argue and then you hug and you go about your way. Very different in America right now. And his piece, op-ed piece in the Times, it was titled, "They Were My Friends for Years. Trump Tore Us Apart." And I'm guilty. If I'm with somebody and I find out that they are a Trump enthusiast, I don't know if I can be with them. Do you find that? Do you have relatives, friends? I just stay away from them. And it's not because we disagree politically. It's because I think the emergence of Trump, if he gets back into the presidency, will mean that America will change to become a dictatorship, that people's lives, not just policies and issues that are remote and done in Washington, that the streets of our cities and towns will be changed dramatically. If you've ever been in a place where there was a fascist government, the military's on the street dictating where you can go and not go. I had that experience for a week once. It's terrifying if you've grown up in America and you suddenly have to have papers to show where you're going and from where hence you came. And if you decide you want to go to the drugstore and get some aspirin, if that's not on your list of where you're going, you don't get there. With officers with rifles and bayonets on the corner. That's what happens in dictatorships. Talk to people from Chile who lived under Pinochet, in Spain under Franco, in Germany under Hitler. That's what I fear. Is it hyperbole? I don't know. I think he would take over the military and the police and ignore the Constitution. I'm told by friends who are not as alarmed as me that the Constitution protect us. And I know that Hitler was not bothered by laws, and he did what he wanted, because that's what dictators and fascists do. Could that happen here? I don't want to find out. I don't want us to find out. Musical conclusion for the day will be, well, except for our signing out song, the Beatles celebrating, came here 70 years ago this week, 60 years ago this week, to be on the Ed Sullivan Show. And then they made a movie. Richard Lester directed it, and it was a delight. Here's the title song from that movie. It's called The Hard Day's Night.
It's been a hard
That's the Beatles, and I'm David Rothenberg, and Michael G. Haskins, thank you for shepherding me through these 2 hours. I hope you had as good a time sitting there in Brooklyn as I did here in Manhattan.
I had a blast.
Talking with our friends, the listeners from WBAI. Michael, have a good week, okay? You too out there in Radioland. We go out with, I'm David Rothenberg. I'll be on Saturday at 8, next Monday at 9. And we'll go out with our closing theme on Mondays, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, with a song that is more than a theme. It's a clarion call. Pay attention to the lyrics.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from
what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. We just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long. Judgment day, so won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. We just let it be. Na, 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Change it, yeah, just you and me. Change it, yeah, change it. Can't do it alone. Need a little help, y'all. Yes, I do. Need a little help. Say it, boy. Need some help, y'all. I'll change the world what it used to be. Can't do it alone. Can't do it alone. Need some help, that. Need some help, that.
A unique moment here. It's a moment where we have a chance to actually demonstrate our power.
Imhotep Gary Bird heard on WBAI Friday evenings from 7 to 9 p.m.
I learned from Dr. Walter Fauntroy, who fought with Dr. King in the Civil Rights Movement, that there were five areas that they identified that they felt politics could control and hit. It was health, housing, education, economics, and social justice. The fact is, WBAI is a nexus for the progressive community to make those changes in all of those areas, and has been decade after decade. I say to you again, whose station?
Our station.
Whose control?
Our control.
Long live WBAI.
This is listener-sponsored, locally controlled WBAI New York.